Father, thank you for your faithfulness, and Lord, may you meet us here now as we look into your word about this journey that we are on, that you've called us into as your sons and daughters, as salt and light, in Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, Tamina, that was excellent. It's great to be back. Was last week with my dad and brother and sister back in Des Moines, Iowa. I was reacquainted very briefly with what wind chill is, so good time to be with my dad, who will be 89 in October, and as he struggles just with these later years, you know, he's been around a long time. By the way, those of us who ride motorcycles, it's 51 degrees outside at this moment, just had to check, and you know what that makes me think? That makes me think of, let's go for a ride. This afternoon, if you ride a motorcycle, and there are some of you who are so blessed, if you're interested in going for a ride, probably about 1:30 or so, 1:30 quarter to two, why don't you see me afterwards, and we'll set up a time and a place to meet up and a destination. So that's Steve, Hank, Michael. Michael's around here somewhere. So there he is. Okay. So if you guys have got the Iron Beasts ready. So, in this church, we are on a journey, and our goal and our desire, at least my desire, is to be able to make disciples among those, be disciples who make disciples among those who are not disciples. It doesn't mean we're not making disciples of those within our four walls. It just means that we are looking beyond the four walls as well and asking the question, Lord, what's it look like to be salt and light in the lives of my friends, my neighbors, my co-workers? And what are some practical steps that we can take, that I can take, in just being having that role in their lives? At the annual meeting, I shared with us just the idea of what might it be like to come to the end of 2018 and say, you know what, we have seen 12 people who have given their life to Christ, who have been baptized, and who are now in disciple-making relationships. And I don't know about you, but I feel a bit embarrassed to say I'm only hoping for and praying for 12. I ought to be able to expand that to 20 or 30. But the Lord knows my challenges that we face in moving in this direction. So I think, Lord, 12 is a great faith challenge for me. If you want to exceed that, we're all good with that. But Lord, what might it be like for us to come down to the end of this year and say, you know, because of what you did in our lives and through our lives, we now have among us 12 individuals who have given their life to Christ, who have been discipled, and who are now in disciple-making relationships. So as a part of that journey, we're going through 5 habits that we can take and embrace, what I might also call signposts along this journey. But these 5 habits are things that we can do, little things. We're not looking at grand, big programs. I'm not a program guy. But we're looking at trying to understand a little bit more clearly what Jesus meant in Matthew chapter 13 about the power of the little things. When Jesus said in Matthew 13, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed which a man took and he planted in a field. And though it was the smallest of all seeds, it's about the size of a grain of sand. Yet when it grows, it becomes the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree. That means it grows to be about 25 feet tall with a canopy of about 20 foot. That's a big tree, right? That's a big tree. And it grows so that the birds of the air can come and perch in its branches and find safety, find refuge, find rest, find life. That's the idea. It's the power of taking little steps, one step after another, after another, after another, in the lives of those that we are praying for, that we have made a list and said, I will commit to pray for this list of people, that God will do a work in their lives over the next year. I will pray for them daily or every other day, however often you can. Because we know that we've got to talk to our Father about our friends before we talk to our friends about our Father. Because becoming a follower of Jesus Christ is not something that I have the power to be able to produce in the life of another person. It is a divine act of God. It is what Jesus says, being born by the Spirit. It's what Paul says, being made alive in Christ. So I don't know why Jesus wants to use us in that process in prayer, but I know he does, and so that's our commitment. But little things can make a big difference. And the journey that we're on begins with small steps, small actions, small habits. And these small steps, and they can make a big difference in the lives of the people that we are praying for. Now, these habits that we're looking at, these steps, these actions, these signposts, they're not original to me. Michael Frost wrote about them in his little book called Surprise the World, a book that was recommended to me by my district superintendent, my mentor, and my friend. And as I read that, I thought, Lord, there's a deeper, richer history to this than even this author pulls out. And that is that these actually go back to the early church in the first century. These habits, these steps were a part of the early church. And these steps are what set them apart from the rest of culture. It's what made them live for unforgettable lives as opposed to forgettable lives. It's what caught the attention of those who were around them and said, wow, this person is different. It's what helped them make an impact in the lives of people around them. But not only that, but these habits lit the fire that launched the gospel throughout the world. We talked about that last week, or actually 2 weeks ago, since I wasn't here last week. Now, the first habit, the first step, the first action that we talked about 2 weeks ago was what? Anybody remember? Be courageous, be bold. Even if you're wrong, be bold. Okay? What was the first habit? Choose to bless others. Yes. Choose to bless. We talked about what that looked like, about what that was, and you had homework, right? You all remember your homework? Or is this where you come to the teacher or the pastor and says, sorry, the dog ate my homework? But the goal and the homework was this. What three people can you choose to bless that week and the week after? What could you do to show an act of kindness, a word of encouragement, an act of love? What could you do to strengthen the arm of another person over the next 2 weeks? And I hope that you're all taking this seriously, just as you would praying for the people that are on your list. Because this journey is very important. It's important to God, and so therefore it's important to us, for we are salt and light. The next habit this week is this. Choose to be hospitable. Choose to be hospitable. Now, some of you may be thinking, oh, Martin, are you going to preach an hour on having someone over for dinner? No, I'm not going to preach an hour on having someone over for dinner. I'm going to preach 45 minutes. Not really, because it's really nice outside and the sun is calling all of us, right? But it's not just about having someone over for dinner and having game, you know, having some time of games and whatnot. That's not what biblical hospitality is. It's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than that. Hospitality in the Bible is not what we think it is. It's not just simply having someone over. A definition of biblical hospitality is one that I came up with here, and that is this. Biblical hospitality is the posture and practice of being with people, friends and strangers, neighbors, coworkers, in ways that they can feel welcomed, they can feel included, they can feel accepted, and they can feel cared for. It's being, it's a posture, it's a presence that we bring into the life of another person. You can have people over to your house for dinner. You can go on a walk with another person. You can have coffee with another person and they walk away and they never felt welcomed, they never felt included, they never felt accepted, and they never felt cared for. But it's a posture of the presence of Christ that we bring to that person. Biblical hospitality fights against favoritism and judgments and cliques. Nothing makes me more sad than when I hear of a clique within our own body. And then sometimes people will come to me and say, Martin, there's cliques here. And I think, no, there's not. And then I'll hear things of where this person is excluded or that person is avoided. And I think, no, That is contrary to what biblical hospitality is. That is not the word of wisdom of Christ. That is the way of the wisdom of this world. It's to say, you're in, you're not. You're in, you're not. Sort of like duck, duck, goose. You know. But biblical hospitality is a way of being where the person that you are with feels welcomed, included, accepted, and cared for. And it fights for that. It fights for that. Now, what might this be like? About 10 years ago, I was taking some classes up at Trinity Western University in Langley, B.C. for a program that I had entered into. And my son was going to nursing school at the same university. But one week, when I was up there taking a class, an intensive, I was with Jeremy, and he said, Dad, he said, you know, I've been going to this Vineyard church. Really? Vineyard? Huh? Not EV free? You're leaving the fold? Are you still saved, son? Not really. But he says, you know, they're having just a gathering over at this couple's house tonight. You want to go? I says, sure. This is just a bunch of friends, you know, people from the church. I said, sure, I don't have anything else going tonight, so let's do it. So I went over there, and it was in a home in Langley, B.C. And I walk in, and people are kind of milling around and laughing. I mean, there's probably 40, 50 people there. People were milling around, and they were laughing. They're just being together, and there was a group of people in the kitchen cooking a meal together, prepping it for the rest of it, for everyone else. And I walked in, and some of you can probably feel this way. You walk in, you think, oh man, here's a bunch of 20-somethings. And I was at that point, I was probably about 47, 48 years old. And I thought, I just not really sure where I fit in. Just wasn't sure, like, you know, gee, this feels kind of awkward here. I mean, I'm with people, you know, I'm married, I have grown kids, and you know, where do I fit in here? So I was just kind of standing there, and pretty soon there was a group of folks, probably about three or four of them, who came over and just started talking to me. And they introduced themselves and began to engage me, and soon included me in their own conversations. And as this conversation unfolded, I quickly discovered that these folks were some of the most open-hearted people I'd ever known. Was it the words that they said? No. It was just the presence that they brought, which shaped the words that they said. But they could have said the same words, but not have had an open-heartedness and communicate something totally different. But I thought, these guys, these folks are really open-hearted. They made space for me in their own lives, in their own friendships. And while I didn't know them, I remember walking away thinking I never felt like I was a stranger among them, even though we were of a different generation. As we talked, they started asking me questions like, so tell us your story. You know, how did you find us? What are you here for? Where are you from? What are you about? You know, and it wasn't in a weird kind of way. You know, I've asked people questions, a lot of questions in the past, and because I like to ask questions. And some people think, this is really creepy. You know, you're going, coming on too strong. I had a guy tell me about that once down in Southern California. And then, okay, I'll dial it back some. But it wasn't in a creepy way, but it was just where they had a genuine interest in my own life, in my life. And they listened. You know how sometimes when you ask someone their story or you ask them questions and they share something, and pretty soon you discover that they're just looking for opportunities sort of to hijack or to tag on their story? That's not what happened. They just listened. And they engaged. And they asked follow-up questions. It was really an incredible time. They listened to what I said. They valued what I said. I felt honored. In a way that is sometimes we're not always aware of how to do, they were able to enter into my story themselves. I walked away from that place feeling cared for by people I'd never met before. And I'll be honest with you, with the exception of my son, and his now wife, she was there, she was hunting for him. Don't tell her I said that. Actually, there were two women that were hunting for him that night. But I never saw any of those folks again. But that doesn't change the fact that I know I wasn't a stranger among them. That I was cared for, that I was welcomed, I was valued. That's hospitality. This program that I was in was focused on spiritual leadership and transformation. And so that means we did a lot of reading and a lot of discussion at a very high level around the issue of community. And while I was sitting in the class the day before talking about the glories of biblical community that the Christian church is supposed to embrace, I'd been reading books on the complexities, and we'd been talking about the complexities of biblical community in the classes. I walk into this gathering and they're doing it. What a contrast. Where did they learn this from? What did they bring to the table that somehow I had missed or had just read about? How did they find this? The gospel. This was a group of young people who, in that season of their life, they were committed to being formed by the gospel of Christ. And it played out in how they engaged with other people. Not just with their words, but with their being. They were shaped at a deeper level by the gospel. And that brought forth words. That brought forth presence. That welcomed. That cared for. That included. It was beautiful. It was incredible. See, hospitality, biblical hospitality, is rooted in the gospel. It's rooted in the very heart and the practice of our Father. Believe it or not, God, our Father, is incredibly, at the core of who He is hospitable. At the core of who He is hospitable. It's not just something He does. It's not just something that we see written about in the Scripture. It's His very character. It's His very heart. And we see this played out throughout the Scriptures, but we especially see it brought to life in the ministry and the life of Christ and how Jesus chose to live. You realize that when Jesus was on earth, He's criticized by leaders for a lot of different things, right? Jewish leaders. You know, they even criticized Him for His hospitality in terms of how they experienced Him. One time he's confronting the Jewish leaders. He says, look, John the Baptist came and he didn't eat and he didn't drink wine, and you said he had a demon. And me, he says this, the Son of Man came eating and drinking. And it happened so much that his critic says, and you say, see how much he's eating and drinking with people? You know, that means he must be a glutton and a drunkard, because he's a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Now, Jesus was not a glutton. He was not obese. Jesus was not a drunkard. It's not like he stumbled around the roads of Palestine. That wasn't what they were saying. That's not what he's saying. That's not who he is. But they were criticizing him because of his heart of hospitality. They're criticizing him because Jesus, time and time again, was always going and sitting around the table and eating and drinking with people. He was being with them in a way that they felt cared for, that they felt valued, that they felt heard, that they felt accepted. That's the reason why people love to be with Him It doesn't matter if they were immoral or moral. He spent time around the table with scribes and Pharisees and teachers of the law. And he spent time around the table with tax collectors and harmartoloi, the worst of all sinners. It didn't matter who you were. Jesus says, I'm going to spend some time with you. And I'm going to spend some time with you. And I'm going to spend some time with you. And I'm going to spend some time with you. Let's go and let's have some drink and let's have some meat. By the way, while I was in Iowa, I had a lot of meat. They didn't have very many vegetables, and I figured out why. You know why? Because in Iowa, the cows eat the vegetables, they eat the grass, and then you eat the cows. So you get it, two for one. I learned that. But Jesus was always around people, but it wasn't like he was having deep Bible studies with them. What he was doing is he was just hearing them. So many times I've heard, no, I'm not being quiet yet. I've only been up 15 minutes. Okay. But he was always spending time with them, eating with them. And it was a profound experience. This is what our Father's like. This is what Jesus was like. It's a way of being with people so that they feel welcomed, included, accepted, and cared for. Hospitality was at the heart of the way Jesus lived. And do you realize this, that eternity will be filled with hospitality? People, I've had older people say, I sure hope we're not sitting around on clouds playing harps. No way. That's not even close representation of reality or hearing choirs or this or that. That's nowhere near what eternity is going to be like. Now, what's it going to be like? Well, it's going to be filled with responsibility and work and things like that in a glorious way. But here in the midst of all of this, there's going to be a rich tradition, a rich rhythm of hospitality. For in Isaiah 25, one of my favorite Old Testament verses. You've heard it many times, but if you're new here, get used to it. Isaiah 25, on this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine and the best of meats and the finest of wines. I hope that there's some lobster and some crab there too. But you know what? If there isn't, that's okay. I'm good with this. The imagery of a table, a celebratory place, a place of being where you are welcomed and you are included and you are accepted and you are cared for. Revelation 19:9 speaks about the need, about how blessed are those who are invited to the wedding feast of the Lamb. Anybody want to go to a wedding feast? It's going to be a glorious time. But what is it that makes it glorious? The food? No, it's the fact that you are welcomed, that you are invited, that you are included, that you are accepted, and you are cared for. This is so much needed today. One author writes this, the home has become a place of solitary confinement. North America might fairly be described as a culture of aloneness. People in the postmodern era, often including those in the church, those who are among us, value and yearn for relational connectedness and yet find it especially or exceptionally elusive. Anybody relate? Desperate need for it. There was a group who did a survey of millennials among the Ivy League universities. Of the top questions that they have in life, and one of the top questions that they had was this, among the questions, the students who were questioned is, how do you create relationships? People are so alone, they don't know how to engage others. They don't know what it's like to come into the presence whose being exudes a presence of being welcomed, cared for, accepted, and valued. But that's what biblical hospitality is. It's not something that we go do, but it's something that is produced within us as we partake in the hospitality of our Father. And then we bring that to others. We are hospitable towards others so that others might experience the hospitality in the heart of our Father. And I want to say this. Hospitality is essential if we are going to be able to thrive as human beings. Because this is what we were made for. Hospitality is essential if we are going to be able to thrive as human beings. Because we are made in the image of our Father, who is hospitable, and He created within us that need to experience that. Incredible. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge. No one should be excluded. And like I said earlier, it's so demoralizing to me sometimes when I hear of people playing favorites or duck, duck, goose or this person. I don't want to be around this person. Well, I don't want to include that because that's the opposite of the gospel. That's the opposite of what our Father does for us. Jesus tells the story in Luke 14, but when you give a banquet, again, another hospitality issue here. Jesus was famous for it. When you give a banquet, invite the poor and the crippled and the lame and the blind, and you will be blessed. Those you have nothing in common with. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Who will you be repaid by? By the Father. Jesus says there's no reason to exclude anyone because they're in a different age and stage of life. There's no reason to exclude anyone because that's not what the heart of our Father is, and that's not the heart that the Father is wanting to produce within us through the power of the gospel. So that's why Paul says in Romans 12, pursue hospitality, be proactive, seek it out, be intentional, take the initiative, look for opportunities. Now, hospitality can happen in 100 different ways. It can happen just by going for a walk. It can happen in tremendous ways when you go for a motorcycle ride with others. Blessed times. Blessed times. It can happen when you have coffee. It can happen when you have people over for dinner. It can happen when you're hanging out at work. Again, it's the presence that you bring. It's the being that you have with others. Now, as you hear this, I want to get an idea of what you're thinking. What are you thinking? Brian, you want to grab a mic? Okay. And oh, all right. Sam had her. She was the first one up.
I'm loving what you're saying, but I'm really struggling with a certain part of it, and I'm just not sure what the right answer is to that, because inviting people into everything and being hospitable is absolutely biblical, but at what point do you say there's a difference between like evangelistic hospitality but also needing that close-knit circle of people that you can be refreshed in? And then when you mentioned cliques, that's where I'm struggling with this, because I'm like, I can definitely see where, yeah, we don't ever want to be a clique. That's not great. That's not welcoming. That's not encouraging. But what is the difference, or is there a difference? I'm struggling with that.
I can go in several different ways on that. Brian, what do you think?
How we deal with it in student ministries, like, is if you're doing something and it's talked about generally in groups where people know about it, you invite everyone. Because when you talk about something when other people know about it and people know and they're excluded, they know they're excluded. And so if it's something where, hey, the group is hanging out, they're like, hey, we're going to go to BJ's after youth group. Like, oh, if you're talking about it, invite everybody. Don't just invite those you want there, because nothing says, I don't like you, like, you're not invited to my party. So we have to do, like, we deal with this all the time. Because what happens is relationships form, and you want relationship, you want community. But community not for the exclusion of others. And I just think about my kids. Like, how would I feel if my kids were excluded from something that I know was going on? As a parent, I rise up and I'm like, wait, my kids have value. Not just to me, but to others. And why are my kids devalued in this? And I think when you look at it from a parent perspective to a kid, that's how we all feel. Like, as an adult, wait, where's my value? And I think that that's the root of hospitality, is finding the value in others. We're all creating the image of Christ. We're all given the Imago Dei. Now, where does relationship with close-knit friends? You will always, I think, have time for your close friends where you can get together. But I think hospitality is rooted in service and not in, like, selfishness.
And I would add, there are at least three categories of friendships that we need. And I don't want to really come up with a distinction. If you're in my generation, you've always heard about friendship evangelism. I don't like friendship evangelism. I like just friendships. Because my objective with someone is not to be their friend until they get saved. I want to be a friend. But you've got the social, actually you got four categories. You got the public sort of affiliation. You know, we're all Mariners fans, or used to be. So you go and you're a part of a common experience. Then you got social, sort of like you know, we're all part of the same church, so you have some commonality and some common interests, some common things to talk about. But yet they're not necessarily close friends. You know, there will be some folks here who I'll never be a close friend with. Is there a problem with that, or is there a reason for that? Is that intentional? No, it's just like, you know, you can't be close friends with everyone. There's social pieces. Now, out of that social piece, then there will be some who emerge a little bit, little closer. And that's what I call personal friends. And those are the ones with whom you begin to share life with at deeper levels. And then you've got intimate friends, which are really only two or three. And that's where you share the intimacies of one's life. If I were to share with some of you some of the things that I share with close friends or intimate friends, you would think that, Martin, that's really a little creepy, a little inappropriate maybe. But what I do is I try not to say you're in, you're out. I would just kind of wait and see, Lord, who do you allow to emerge into the various categories of friends? I often tell people, if you want to be my close friend or my intimate friend, then you're probably going to get pretty lonely, because I tend to focus on people who are beyond those categories. But what gives me my energy, what energizes me in terms of the work that I do in relationships and the presence and the being I bring to relationships, is not so much the relationships themselves, but it's my relationship with my Father. Okay, does that make sense? That's what energizes me to function in all four categories of relationships. So when I am with intimate friends and close friends, it's really, really good. I was with a very good friend, close friend, on Thursday morning, and I walked away thinking, you know, that was energizing to me. That was really good. Do I have to have that all the time? No. And are there other people who cannot enter into that space? No, there are other people who can't enter into that space, but this was not a friendship that I chose. It was something that just kind of emerged in my life. So some of this is just, you wait and see how the Father allows things to emerge, and to try to level out and to evolve. There we go, that's the word. So does that answer your question? It gets tricky, but there's no rights or wrongs to it. It's more about one's heart, one's attitude towards what one is doing.
And I've got a story just about that. I'm on a team, a national team, and
I know, and I'm jealous of those friendships that you have.
Well,
just saying.
And I was in Orlando with this team, and The guy that was leading the team is really close friends with another guy on the team. And so there was four of us at this house, just the four of us. And it was like, all right, well, one of them went to bed. So then it's me and this other guy and the leader. And they started talking. And they have so much life experience. It was like, all right, I have nothing to engage in with here. And they both kind of got focused. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go. So I went out into the pool. And I was having this emotional time. And it was one of these things, I became jealous of what they had, and it did something inside of me where the Lord was working on, hey, I need to be happy for this person. So there's room for that relationship, and some of it is us recognizing, hey, I need to be happy for the deep relationships that are there, but it's the people who have the deep relationships that need to be, hey, who can I be open to? Because these deep relationships won't change with me being hospitable. Like, there's room for both.
Yeah. And regardless of the category of relationships that you're in, you look at it not so much as what am I going to walk away with from it, but, Lord, what am I going to bring to the table? What's the being that I'm going to be with these folks? Lord, help me communicate to them that they are welcomed in my life. Help me communicate to them that they are cared for, that they are accepted, that they are valued, regardless of which category of friendship they may be in my life.
Before coming here, I was looking for a church for a couple of years, and I got to visit a dozen or two dozen churches in that time. And I had this exact experience. I walk in, everybody's really good at having like 8 or 10 people that say good morning to me, right? And so I got the feeling they were saying, yes, there's room in our church for you. There's room in a Bible study for you. I never once got the feeling there's room in my life for you at whatever level. Mm. And that's what made the difference for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Pat.
I had a similar kind of situation before I came here, and I was looking for churches. And I went to one church, and the greeter at the door was the only person that talked to me. And it was pretty impacting. In fact, they did this little thing where they had these little glow sticks and they talked about being the light and shining. They passed out all these light sticks. You know, they come up and get a light stick and pass it on to someone else. No one turned to me. And it was really impacting for me as I looked at it. I was like, wait a minute, I need, you know, when I go to a church, I don't want to be that person that just ignores people or just looks around. And I try really hard. I'm not great at it. In fact, I come up to people and I say hello to them and they're like, oh yeah, I met you like a month ago. And I'm like, oh, well, hello again. But I had a friend of mine that bless her heart, she had come to our church and she said, no one really ever talked to me. She had talked to her brother. She had called her brother. And she's like, I don't know about this church. You know, they don't say hi to me. Da, 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 da. And he said, well, did you say hi to them? And she's like, well, I didn't. And so she made it a life goal, basically, at church to at least hug 10 people. And her legacy when she passed away were people that said, you know, it was because of Nancy that I really felt loved. It was because of Nancy that I felt accepted. And that, to me, was like, wow, is that something that, you know, I'm not a great hugger, but I really try hard to at least say hello and so on. But having that openness and that ability, and last night at our bingo night, there was a family that kind of sat off to the side. And I saw one other person go and talk to them. And again, it was just like, wait a minute. You know, this is a family that has come to our bingo night. They've come to support. They were invited by a friend. And I was really kind of surprised that no one came up and talked to them. My husband and I ended up sitting next to them, so I had some good conversation with them, or a little bit of conversation with them. But I think we really need to be aware of those who come in and, you know, it's like, wait a minute. You know, nobody's really ever said hi to them. No one's come up to them. What is it that I can do? And to be open to that.
Hmm. Again, it's not about making who's going to be best friends, who's not going to be best friends. That's not what it's about. Hospitality is more about the presence that I bring into another person's life, my way of being with people.
Well, honestly, you mostly answered my question, but if Sam's question could be rephrased as, I recognize the potential for cliquishness in my life, what do I do? What's the opposite side of that? What if you're on the outside and you see cliquishness, you know, the temptation is there to become bitter and angry and just kind of seal yourself off. How do you combat that side of things?
I think you real succinctly, you go back and say, Father, what is it that's causing me to wall people out? What is it that's causing people to wall people out? And what do you want to do in my life in terms of making me a person that's more reflective of the work of the gospel, the reflection of the heart of my Father towards other people, so that I can go and I can begin to engage people in a way, in my being, so that I welcome them, that I invite them, that I value them, that I listen to them, that I care for them. And I do that in a way regardless of whether or not I get anything in return. The only way to deal with cliquishness is to call it what it is. It's evil. It's evil because it demeans the value of another person. And the only way to combat that is to call it what it is and then become a person who chooses to value other people, regardless of whether or not I get anything out of it or not. Jesus never walked away from someone because he thought, you know what, if I go and I have dinner with you, I'm not going to get anything out of it. Right? He did it because of who he was. He did it because of what he was modeling. But more than that, he did it just because who he is. He is a hospitable heart. Our hearts are formed, being transformed by the gospel, but it's being transformed out of a heart that's more selfishness and self-centered.
Well, and I think when you look at it, Jesus had Peter, James, and John that he was tight with. He had the 12, and then he spent a ton of time with other people. And so I think it just goes to show that, you know, he was welcoming, loving, hospitable, but yet he understood the need for that intimate relationship. And it will always be a wrestle.
Yeah.
I think, and that, I know for me, it's always a wrestle. Mm-hmm. And I think just acknowledging that wrestle and also acknowledging what God's doing in your own heart is so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if selfishness is the root, and that's where it is for me, is I just get so selfish. I want to go in my room, lay in my bed, and I want peace and quiet. And I don't want my kids to interrupt it. I can be hospitable, actually, to my kids. Hospitality isn't just outside my family. It's in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. One more. Okay, Cindy, and then...
Well, I was just going to add to Jason. I think sometimes, and this is my own experience, when I feel like I'm not feeling being included or there's a click over here, the Lord has just said, but you're not the only one that feels that way, so let me open your eyes to who else is around you that perhaps you could go and extend, because there are other people on the margins as well. You're mm-hmm. not alone. So maybe there is a group, and for whatever reason, you're not a part of it, but... I've had to say, Lord, who are you asking me to go and be hospitable to that maybe I'm not seeing or paying attention to? So I think a combination of all that's what's been said is, one, asking God, where are you inviting me and calling me? What's the stuff in my own heart I need to deal with? And be open to what God's leading is, because I think that's what Jesus did. He went where the Father sent him, mm-hmm. which was not the place that the religious leaders thought that they should go. And I can get my own mindset of where I think I should be, or I can open myself up to the Spirit to say, where would you call me? And I've had amazing friendships with people I probably never would have considered had I not let God lead me to that and be open to that. Mm-hmm. So it's letting go of my own expectations and being okay not sitting with the cool kids at the lunch table, because there's some other really great lunch tables with great people at them.
Yeah. Okay. Marilyn, that'll be it. Because it is 11:23 and it's 55 degrees outside.
Yeah, thank you. When I first came here, we had a really neat thing, I thought, that helped us meet new people and establish relationships with them and know them a little better. And it was called Supper Six. And Supper Six, for me, has been very valuable. I met Sharon and Dwight and met Sam. And there are other people that I can think of right now that I speak to in church, but I don't know them well. I think about Gary and Don over here. I'd love to know them better.
They're awesome people, by the way.
Oh, well, that's great. I'm glad you know that. I would like to know that in more depth, too. So that's one example. And people sign up for Supper 6. Nobody beats them over the head. It's other people that want to relate to folks in the church that they might not know very well, but they would like to. Yes. So it seems like that would be a good resurrected program.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Marilyn. And let me just say, it is a challenge. It doesn't matter how you slice it. That's why Peter had to say to those that he wrote in 1 Peter 4, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. I have a whole lot of stuff I can say about that, but I do believe that if we engage in this, not just with those here, because we're not just about making disciples amongst those who are within these four walls. It's about those that you're praying for. It's about those folks that you're praying for. Those folks that you're on your list. Make space for them. It's some powerful, powerful stuff. I'm reminded, and I'll close with this, I really will. The story of Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector. He is hated in his community of Jericho. No one wanted anything to do with him. Here Jesus was coming through town, and so all the crowds were gathering around Jesus, and he wanted to see Jesus, but he couldn't go through the crowds, probably because he would have been killed. So he goes and he stays on the outskirts of the crowds, and he climbs a tree, and because he just wants to see Jesus. And Jesus walks by him and looks at him and says, come down immediately, Zacchaeus. How did he know his name? I have no idea. But he knew. And he looks at him, come down immediately, for I must be at your house today. So they go off, and as they go off, everyone was mumbling, says, look at that. He's going off and being friends and being a host to tax collectors and sinners. They have meals. They have a meal, and I don't know what happens at that meal, but at the end of the meal, Zacchaeus stands up and says this. He stood up. That's significant. He had courage. He stood up, and because of the hospitality of Jesus, his way of being with Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus looks at him and tells everyone, he says, you know what? I'm going to give double of everything that I have to those who are in need. And not only that, but if I have cheated anybody, and I have, I'm going to repay them four times. That was well beyond anything that had ever been commanded within Scripture. Why did he do that? Because of the hospitality of Jesus. He had spent time with Jesus. We bring that same kind of being to those among us and those beyond us. So you got homework for this coming week and next couple of weeks, and that is, who can you begin to be hospitable towards among us, but also, and do not forget this, beyond us, those with whom you're praying for. It could be a cup of coffee. Just ask them their story. Just ask them their story. Ask them about their life. And be with them in a way that values them, that welcomes them, that listens to them, and cares for them. Father, may you take and allow the roots of your word and your example to grow deep and penetrate our hearts. Lord, that we may continue to emerge as salt and light in deeper and brighter ways. In Jesus' name, amen.